good.
Good morning. This week we are learning Maseches Sota Daf Lamed Hey. The weekly shir from Maseches Sota is sponsored by David and Paula Baumzer and Omo Construction, Building Futures. The breakfast is sponsored by Bagel Munch, Le'ili Nishmas, Shimon Ben Zev, and Fega Bas Chaim, Zev Ben David, Sarah Bas Shalom, Chaim Ben Yehoshua, and Edel Bas Moshe Yosef. We are still in the exciting Agadah section of this perek, and today we're going to be talking a lot about the Meraglim. And it's always fun to try to figure out why we've been talking about the Meraglim. How did we even get here? So the perek started off, Elu Ne'emarim, talking about which things can be said b'chol lashon, like Kriyashma and Davening and Berchus Amazon, and which things have to be specifically b'lashon HaKodesh, and the things that have to be said specifically lashon HaKodesh, like Chalitza, Mikra, Bikurim, those were learned from Har Grizim and Har Eval. Har Grizim and Har Eval was when we would, when Leviam recited the Brachos and Klalos immediately after we crossed the Yarden. And so last week we had the tangent where we described Bnei Yisrael carrying the stones across the Yarden, and we compared that to the Meraglim carrying the heavy fruit from Eretz Yisrael, and that kind of shifted us to talk a bit about the Meraglim, and we're going to continue to discuss the Meraglim today. So we're starting on the bottom of Lamed Aleph Amud Beis, literally the last three words. Quote in the pasuk, "Vayashuvu mitur haaret," that the Meraglim came back from spying the land Eretz Yisrael. "Vayelchu vayavo," and it says that they came. So it's weird to say vayelchu, but vayelchu vayavo sounds like they went to go spy and then vayavo and then they came to share their report. But we already said vayashuvu that they already came back. So if they already came back from spying the lands, why is it said vayelchu that they went to spy the land? They already came back from that whole trip. So the Gemara darshins that extra word of Vayelchu, Amar Rav Yochanan, Meshum Rav Shimon ben Yochai, this whole daf is going to be great because it's just quoting things that we already know from Rashi Yala Torah, which is fantastic to see the Gemara where Rashi is quoting it from. So Amar Rav Yochanan, Meshum Rav Shimon ben Yochai, Makish Halicha Lebia. The Gemara is connecting the Halicha of going to spy on the land of Eretz Yisrael to the Bia of coming back with their bad report. Ma Bia Be'etza Ra'a, Halicha be'etzara, just like they came back with bad news about what Eretz Yisrael looks like. It's going to be too hard for us to conquer the land. The people there are too large. They're giants. We can't destroy them. So af halicha be'etzara, so to their initial going was also be'etzara. They also initially went with the bad intentions of saying bad things about the land. There's a classic kasha that they ask on this Rashi, where on Parshas Shlach, where Rashi quotes this Maimer Chazal, that is it really true that the Halicha was also Be'etzara, that they also went initially with intentions to say bad things about the land? But Rashi also points out, quoting from other places in Chazal, that the Meraglim are referred to as Anashim, and Rashi points out Anashim isn't just stam people, it's Anashim Chashuvim, very Chashuv, the Gedolim of the time were the ones who went out to be the Meraglim to look at the land. So how could these Anashim Chashuvim be the same people who initially, when they went, were already bad people that wanted to say bad things about the land of Eretz Yisrael? So the Stipler has an amazing vort, where Enoch and Ami, initially, before they were appointed to be the people to give their opinion on the land, they were Anashim Chashuvim. But the second that they got that appointment of, you are going to be the ones to go represent Klal Yisrael, and we want to hear your, at least they thought, that we wanted to hear their opinion about what the land's going to look like, so that gaiva, that sense of I'm the one that's going to represent Klal Yisrael, that appointment itself is what made the shift of being the Anashim Chashuvim to being the Eitza Ra. There are different opinions about what exactly it was that made the Meraglim say such bad things about the land. Most of the things that they saw could have been interpreted really in either a good way or a bad way, as we're going to see. And everything they had was with the lens of saying something bad about the land, that they had this initial going was to say bad things about the land. They're very specific about why they had that lens. The Chavetz Chaim has a very interesting vort where he explains that it was based on the fact that not Gaiva, but the opposite, that we thought that we weren't deserving to enter the land of Eretz Yisrael, that we had the Cheta Egel and various sins under our belt, that we don't deserve to be the ones to go into Eretz Yisrael, and therefore they had that negative lens, like, how could we possibly defeat these amazing people? Yes, we have Hashem, but we don't deserve Hashem's help over here. That's the Chavetz Chaim's pshat. And then a lot of the Mefarshim quote the Zohar. The Zohar says that these Meraglim were actually the Nisiim, there were these people who had very chashuv positions, and they also understood that once they entered into Eretz Yisrael, they would lose that position, and so therefore, perhaps subconsciously, they weren't intentionally saying bad things to make a ruse that they can stay in the positions, but perhaps subconsciously they said bad things because they in their minds they realized that they would lose their chashuv positions if they would enter into Eretz Yisrael. So various mahalchim to explain why they had this etzarah, but our Gemara says that even the initial going was beetzarah to say bad things about the land. With that negative lens, everything they saw was interpreted as a negative.
Maybe they sort of don't spoil a good gig, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like everything, they got the mon, everything was going their way, and everything, now we have to work.
Shkoyach, that's a third shot also. That in Eretz Yisrael, they're going to have to start working the land. In the Midbar, we get the man. We have Hashem taking care of us. In fact, you could even say it was, it's inappropriate. In the Midbar, we get to focus on our ruchnias. We get to focus and we get to learn more. We get to focus on our avodas Hashem. Enter Eretz Yisrael, we're going to have to work the land and make our own parnasa. It's going to be hard. So perhaps you can even understand the rationale. But yeah, that's a fantastic addition as well. So then now the Gemara continues to explain, to quote the Psukim about the Meraglim, Vayesapru lo vayomru banu, that they started off saying that they came to this land, and the Pasuk continues that they said, they described the land as being good, as being chalav udvash, and being a great land, and then ksiv efes ki az ha'am, and then continues to say the bad things about how the land is too, they're too strong, we're not going to be able to defeat them. They started off good and then said the bad traits. And Amar Rav Yochanan, again also quoted from Rashi, Mishum Rav Meir, Kol Lashon Hara She'ein Po Dabar Emes B'Tchilaso Ein Miskayim B'Sofo. If you say Lashon Hara and you say everything's bad, then they're not gonna believe you. If everything you're saying is Mamish Sheker. If you start off with something Emes and then you throw in some Sheker at the end, that's the, if you want a tip to how to get your Lashon Hara to be Miskayim, so you have to start off with something that sounds good and then shift in to the Lashon Hara part. So they started off saying the good things about the land, and then they shifted into the things that were a bit more subjective about how we're not going to be able to conquer these people. But Yahas Kalev, the pasuk then continues that Kalev silenced everybody as Ha'am El Moshe, or we're going to explain what does the Lashon of Yahas mean. Amar Rabba Shehi Sison Bidvar. Kalev had this trick in his back pocket, which again we also most likely know from Rashi Ala Torah, that it goes as follows: that Pasach Yehoshua Dekamishdai. So Yehoshua was trying to tell Klal Yisrael that really the land's going to be great and there's nothing to worry about, and they said back to him, Amri Le Dein Rosh Ketia Yimalel. Should we let this person who they called is like a disparaging nickname, Rosh Ketia, which literally means the cut off head. So Rashi explains why are they calling Yehoshua the cut off head. So Rashi explains that this Yehoshua, who's trying to tell us the land is good, he doesn't even have any children. At least at that point, he didn't have any children, so he's not going to be able to inherit a stake in the land. So we shouldn't take his word for it. He's not even going to get a chelek in the end of the day anyway. So he can't rely on his opinion. And the side and the Gilyon on the side of the page quotes from the Aruch that they called him Reish Ketia, that Reish in the beginning of his name is a letter Yud that is a Ketia, that is the shortest of the letters, referencing the fact that Moshe gave him that extra Yud in the beginning, perhaps trying to reference the fact that he had some, perhaps he had some special treatment, and that's why he had this positive view. But you should trust the rest of the Meraglim who didn't have that special Moshe supporting them. Amar, so Yimalel, so they said to Yehoshua, Yehoshua tries to say good things about the land, and they said, and all of the Meraglim responded back, don't listen to Yehoshua, because he's the Rosh Ketia, don't listen to what he has to say. So Amar, so Kalev said to himself, Imishta ina Amri bi Milsa, v'chas minli, if I say something good about the land, then they're just going to also silence me, they're going to call me a nickname too. So Amar Lahen, so what did Kalev do? So he said as follows, he started off implying that he was going to say something bad, just like them. He started off saying, is that all that Moshe did for us? Which they thought he was going to say something bad about Moshe Rabbeinu, which you're like, oh great, somebody else who's on our side, who doesn't like Moshe. And perhaps he specifically called him Ben Amram, which is not the most covetic way to refer to Moshe. So that implied he was going to say something bad. And Savri Beginuse Kamishdai. So Ishtiku. They thought that he was going to say something bad about Moshe, so they were quiet. He thought that Kalev was on their team. But Amar Lahu, and then he said, is that all that Moshe did for us? Hotzianu Mitzrayim. He did all these great things. He helped us come out of Mitzrayim. Bekaralanu Es Hayam. And we crossed the Yamsuf. Bechilanu Es Haman. And he helped us get the man. in the Midbar. So Yomar Asu Sulamos Fa'alu L'Rakia Lo Nishmalo. If he told us to go up to the sky, we should listen to him because he has helped us so much until now. So Alo Na'alev Yorashnu Osa, we should similarly listen to Moshe and go up to Eretz Yisrael and trust that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to protect us. The pasuk says, "V'ha anashim asher alu imo amru lo nuchal." That the Meraglim said that we're not going to be able to defeat the giants that live there. Amar Rabbi Chanina bar Papa, davar gadol dibru Meraglim ba'ososha. The Meraglim said something terrible, something much terrible that the Meraglim said. It was mamish kfira what they said, because they said ki chazak hu mimenu, which simply means that the Meraglim, that the giants in Eretz Yisrael are stronger than us. Altakri mimenu, ela mimenu. Which Rashi says it's the same word, mimenu and mimenu, but don't read it as mimenu, that the giants are stronger than us. Ela mimenu kiveyachol. They're stronger than even a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Chas v'shalom. That afilu bala bayis eino yachol lahotzi kelav misham. That even a Kadosh Baruch Hu, the bala bayis of the world, isn't going to be able to help us take care of these very strong nations over there. The Lashon was actually apikarsis against a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Eretz Ocheles Yoshvehi. They said that the land eats those who settle there. It's a very dangerous land to live in. Darash Rava Amar Hakadosh Baruch Hu. And Hakadosh Baruch Hu says, Ani Chashavtia Letova VeHeim Chishvu Lera. Hakadosh Baruch Hu says it's very sad that I set up everything for them to actually be in their benefit, and the things that I set up to be in their benefit, they interpreted and perceived as being bad. For example, Ani chashavtia letova dekol hecha dematu meis chashiva didu, that everywhere that they went, I set it up, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, that there would be the chashuvim of that area had died. And everyone would be busy, all the people who lived in Eretz Yisrael at that time were busy with the gvura and their avelos that they would be nohig. And ki hechi denitridu, Hashem said that was intentional, so that they would be so busy with dealing with the mace, below lishalu abasrayu, and they wouldn't notice the meraglim who are scattering around, looking around, and trying to check out the land. So it was intentional. I set up all these mesim in Eretz Yisrael so that the people that live there would be too busy and not notice Klal Yisrael walking around. Ve'ikud Amri, and some explain that specifically who were the people who died. It was specifically Eov, Nach Nafshe, that Eov died at that time. Ve'atridu, and everybody was busy. Kulei Alma behesbeda, they were busy being maspid. Eov, Rashi says perhaps Eov's zechusim now wouldn't be able to help them because Eov would have died. There's a many way machlokes about which time period Eov lived in Baba Basra, and this is within the assumption that he lived in the times of Moshe. Maybe he lived in other times of history, times of Achashverosh. There's a lot of different pshatim, but this mahalach, this understanding is that Eov lived in the times of the Meraglim, and he had died at that time to be the distraction so that the giants wouldn't notice Klal Yisrael walking around. But so that was supposed to be a good thing, but heim chishvu l'ra'a eretz ocheles yoshvehi. And all the Meraglim saw was something bad, that, oh my gosh, look, everybody dies here, it's such a dangerous land, we're not going to be successful if we go in there. So the very thing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was trying to do for our benefit to protect us was actually what we interpreted as actually being something negative, and we didn't appreciate the guidance and protection of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And they continued, Vanehi ve'einenu kacha gavim, v'chein hayinu v'gomer, v'chein hayinu be'einayhem, that the Meraglim said that we felt like grasshoppers, that we were so tiny, and also v'chein hayinu be'einayhem, and they viewed us as grasshoppers. So the first part, that we felt like grasshoppers, that makes sense, because I know that I feel small, but how can we know that they viewed us as tiny little grasshoppers? I don't know what they're thinking. Summer of Misharshia, Meraglim Shakri Havu, that the Meraglim were lying, that second half of the statement was Mamish Sheker, because Bishlama Vanehi Ve'einin Kachagavim Lechi. Okay, they can understand that they felt like grasshoppers in their own eyes. Elach Vechein Hayinu Be'einehem Mina Havayadi. How do they know that the giants there viewed us as grasshoppers? So that's one understanding, but the Mara responds, Vilohi. That's actually not correct. Really, the Meraglim did know, but by fact, that the giants viewed them as little chagavim, little grasshoppers. How do they know? Because ki havu mavri aveli tusi arzi havu mavri. That as we just said, there are a lot of people dying in the land, and they were busy with their havra'a, like their sudas havra'a, their equivalent. Their meal after the kvura, and they were doing that under the cedar trees, v'chi chazinhu, and then when they were right up and close to the little tiny meraglim. So salku yasvi pe'ilani. So the meraglim went and they climbed up the trees to kind of hide and get out of the way. And shami de ka'amri, and then the meraglim heard the giants there saying, kachazinan inshi de damu lekamsi pe'ilani. Oh look, we just saw some people that looked like grasshoppers in the trees. So it wasn't just a conjecture that I think that they viewed me as a grasshopper. No, I literally heard them describe me as a grasshopper. Therefore, they were able to say, v'chein hayinu be'enehem. And then the pasuk continues, "Vatisa kol ha'eda vayitnu es kolam vayivku." That after this bad report from the meraglim, so all of Klal Yisrael cried. And we know on Marabba, Marab Yochanan, also Hayom, Erev Tisha B'Av Haya, that day was around Tisha B'Av. And Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu says, "Hein bachu b'chia shalchinam, v'ani ekba lehem b'chia l'doros." That they at that time cried for no reason. Everything was perfectly safe in Eretz Yisrael, and the Meraglim's report was incorrect, and we cried for no reason. So therefore, va'ani ekpa lehem bechi ledoros, I'll give them a reason to cry. And I, of course, Dan Tisha B'Av, both korbanos of the Beis Hamikdash. On that date, Hashem gave us a bechia that we still cry over ledoros. The Griz actually has two ways of understanding what this Gemara means. When the Gemara says that because the Meraglim's report was on Tisha B'Av, therefore we have our Tisha B'Av, does that mean that this is one of the reasons why the Chorban happened? That the Chorban, if you want to know why the Chorban happened, so we know that there are a couple of reasons, depending on which Bayis Rishon and Bayis Sheni. Was it the Gimel Chamuros? Was it Sinas Chinam? So perhaps we have to also add to that list, and the Meraglim was the reason why we had to have the Chorban Beis HaMikdash. Or perhaps, no, all the Gemara is saying is that we deserved a Chorban because of the bad things that we were doing, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu orchestrated it to be on this day to correspond and to remind us about the Bechiah Shalchinam, which had happened historically on that day. So here's a bit of a Chakira. Is it a Bechiah Ledoros on this day? This is a reason why we deserve the Chorban? Or this isn't a reason why? This is just why Hashem made it on this date to correspond to the Bechiah Shalchinam by the times of the Meraglim. Two ways to think about it. The pasuk then continues more by the meraglim. By yomru kol ha'eda lirgom osam ba'avanim, that they all wanted to throw stones at Yehoshua and Kalev because of what they had come to report, and they didn't. They were the majority rules. Majority said that there was a bad land, so they wanted to throw stones at Yehoshua and Kalev. And the pasuk then ends uksiv ukvod Hashem nira ba'ol moed. So it says they wanted to throw stones at them, and by the way, the kvod Hashem, the Shechina, was by the ol moed. So Bechiah Bar Abba says that these two parts of the pesukim should actually be read together. That melamed shenachlu avonim v'zarkum klape mala. That they actually again apikarsis. They wanted to throw stones at Hakadosh Baruch Hu. They were mamish rejecting Hakadosh Baruch Hu. Just like the Meraglim had said that ki chazak hu memenu, that they were that the giants would be able to that Hakadosh Baruch Hu wasn't strong enough to defeat the giants. Chas v'shalom. So too they wanted to throw stones at Hashem for putting us in a terrible predicament. Vayamusu ha'anashim motzi'i di'bas ha'aretz ra'a b'magefa. And the people, right, the Meraglim, who had said the Lashon Hara about Eretz Yisrael, died the Magefa, they died with a terrible plague. So Amar of Shimon ben Lakish, Shemesu Misa Mishuna, that they died an interesting, a unique type of death. What was that unique death? There is a machlokas. Amar b'chanina bar papa, darash rav shila, ish kafar tamarta, melamish nishdar bev lishonam, v'nafal al tiburam. That their tongues got very, very long and went down all the way to their belly. V'hayu tola'im yotzos milishonam, v'nechnasos b'tiburam. And there were worms that were coming out of their mouth towards their belly. V'mitiburam v'nechnasos b'lishonam. And there were also worms coming from their belly towards their mouth. There were worms going in both directions from their elongated tongues. Of course, the general idea of their tongues being in part of the onesh is because that they had said lashon hara about the land. And Rav Nachman by Yitzchak Amar ba askara mesu, he said that they died with the misa of askara, which Chazal tell us in Maseches Shabbos is one of the punishments for lashon hara, which is also a type of illness which starts from the mouth and ultimately leads to death. Again, this choking from the mouth is supposed to correspond to the lashon hara, that they use their mouths in an inappropriate way, and therefore their punishment was through their mouths as well. So that is Arkan, the Meraglim section of the Agadata. And now we go back to what we started with, but still in the Agadata portion. So we got into this, as we had said, Because Klal Yisrael had crossed the Yarden at the times of Yehoshua, carrying those stones, which was like the carrying of the grapes of the Meraglim. So we started talking about the tangent of the Meraglim. But now we're going to jump back to crossing the Yarden, that the Kohanim had stepped in, and that made the Yarden, get out of the way for Klal Yisrael. And then they all crossed through. And the Gemara now continues, and the two dots on towards the bottom ish of Lamed Hayim and Aleph. The Kevan Sha'Allah Ha'acharon Shabi Yisrael Min HaYarden. Once the last one of Klal Yisrael completely crossed the Yarden onto the other side. So Chazru Mayim Lim Koman. So now the water went back to its place. It went back to the way that it was usually flowing. Shneimar, as the pasuk says, "Vayhi ba'alos haKohanim nosei Aron bris Hashem mitocha Yarden." That once the Kohanim who were carrying the Aron had were in the Yarden, and nasku kapos rak the Kohanim elacharava, the Kohanim's feet went back onto dry land. Vayashuvu meha Yarden limekoman. The water of the Yarden went back to where it usually was. Vayilchu kitmoshel shom al kol gidosav, and the water started to flow exactly as it had in days previously. So Rashi explains that the way the pasuk is supposed to be understood is the Kohanim stepping back onto dry land wasn't on the other side of the dry land with the rest of Klal Yisrael. The Kohanim took a step backward and were on the previous side of the Yarden. So all of Klal Yisrael were successfully across the Yarden in Eretz Yisrael proper, and the Kohanim were still stuck on the Ever HaYarden on the part outside of Eretz Yisrael. They had not yet crossed, but once they took a step backward, all the water of the Yarden went back. It was no longer being split. So how did they get it?
That means we moved away, like the tribal formation. They had the two different camps, then the Aron, and then the back to it. So Sala suggests here that that's not what happened here, that they were almost in the way like, Yasfim, right? Gad Masif.
Right, yeah, because we did say last time there was an opinion that they travel Kechani Yasam.
That's true too.
There's a machlokas about it. Right. But definitely I think everyone has to agree that the Aaron and the Kohanim stayed back until everyone crossed. So they stepped in, that made it split, and then everyone crossed, and then they stepped backwards.
They closed up, so to speak.
Yeah, so that part of the formation definitely was was not the way that they had crossed. So now they're stuck on the wrong side of the Yarden. So how are they going to get across? So Nimsa Aron Venosav Kohanim Mitzad Echad VYisrael Mitzad Echad. The Kohanim haven't crossed yet, so they're stuck on the wrong side of the Yarden. The rest of Yisrael, of Klal Yisrael, are on the correct side of the Yarden. They cross into Eretz Yisrael. So how do the Kohanim get across? So Nasa Aron Es Nosav V'Avar. So the Aron carried the Kohanim, but usually the Kohanim were, not usually, in this instance, the Kohanim were carrying the Aron, and for this particular moment, the Aron carried the carriers across the Yarden. Shene'emar v'yihi kasher tam kol ha'am la'avor v'yavor Aron Hashem v'kohanim lefnei ha'am. That after all of Klal Yisrael had crossed the Yarden, then the Aron and the Kohanim had crossed afterwards as well, and the Aron was the one who carried, was the thing that carried the Kohanim across the Yarden. So the Aron was able to carry the Kohanim. And the Gemara now shifts to discuss various different stories in Shmuel Aleph and Shmuel Beis about the travels of the Aron. Let's do a bit of history, so the Gemara is going to mamish jump around to one part, other part, backwards and forwards in time. So let's just do a bit of a review of the travels of the Aron at that time in Shmuel Aleph, Shmuel Beis. Rashi actually has a great summary for us also on Lama Gimel, Amud Beis, the last Rashi, if you want to take a look at that also afterwards. So the Aron, we know, was stolen by the Plishtim. At the times of Eli, they would take the Aron with them out to war, and at one of those instances, the Plishtim stole the Aron. They soon realized that they were having not such a good time with the Aron. They were being punished as a result for taking the Aron. So the Plishtim, let's call this number one, the Plishtim sent back the Aron on wagons to Klal Yisrael. And then once we have the Aron, so David attempted to bring that Aron to Yerushalayim, to Ir David. On the first attempt, they were bringing the Aron, they were carrying it, they were bringing it on a wagon, and the story of Uzzah occurs, that the Aron starts to appear as if it's going to fall off the wagon. Uzzah goes and tries to catch it, and he's punished because he should have realized that we just read the Kohanim were carried by the Aron, so we don't need somebody to help us catch the Aron from dropping, the Aron is not going to drop. It's able to carry itself. So that's on the trip from, we got the Aron back from the Plishtim, we try to bring it to Yerushalayim, so as David brought it to Yerushalayim on that first leg of the trip, the story of Uzzah occurs. David sees something bad happen, so he decides, let's not bring it to Yerushalayim, let's instead leave it by Ovid Edom, who has a lot of bracha, a person whose house has a lot of bracha as a result of housing the Aron. After David sees how, like, the bracha and the zechus that Obed Edom had for housing the Aron by him, so he decided to then take it from Obed Edom and continue on the trip to bring it to Yerushalayim, to Ir David. And eventually, when Shlomo builds the Beis HaMikdash, they put the Aron in the Beis HaMikdash over there. So we have three different parts of this travel that are going to come up in our Gemara. Let's say number one is by the Plishtim sending us back the Aron because they didn't like having it by them. Number two is once we had it, so David tries to bring it to Yerushalayim, and there's the issue of Uzzah that occurs. That's going to be the topic of our Gemara right now in a second. And then part three is after David decides to not bring it to Yerushalayim because of the whole Uzzah story, eventually he has a change of heart, and part three is when he decides to actually bring the Aron from the house of Obed-Edom to Ir David to bring it to Yerushalayim. That's going to be part three. So our Gemara is going to talk about now part two, the whole story of Uzzah, once David had tried to bring it to Yerushalayim. So the Gemara says, "Val davar zeh ne'anash Uzzah." So what our Gemara had just said, that the Aron's able to carry the Kohanim, that's the reason why Uzzah was punished. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, as they were traveling with the Aron, "Vayavo ad Goren Kidon," that they were in the place of Goren Kidon, that's where the Aron looked like it was slipping. "Vayishlach Uzzah es yado le'echoz es ha'aron." So Uzzah stretched out his hands to go and catch the Aron from falling. "Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu," and HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, "Uzzah nosav nasa atmo lo kol shekein." Hashem says, "Uzzah, the Aron's able to carry the Kohanim, the Aron's able to carry the carriers, so of course, Atmo, of course the Aron can carry itself, L'kol shekein it can carry itself." Therefore, Uzzah was punished. "Vayichar af Hashem be'Uzzah, vayikahu sham al hashal." And therefore, Hashem was mad at Uzzah, and Hashem punished Uzzah and killed Uzzah at that time, al hashal. What's the lashon of al hashal? Rav Yochanan, Rabbi Elazar, chad amar al iske shalu. One is that it was al iske shalu. Rashi says for his shogeg, for his mistake that he had just done. Shalu is milashon shogeg, that his mistake for stretching out his hands and not thinking that the Aron is going to catch itself. That's why he was punished, which we would generally understand. V'chad amar, no, he did something even worse. Sha'asat tzracha befana, that he actually defecated in front of the Aron, and that act of great disrespect was the reason why he was punished, and not just the stretching out his arms ordeal. He actually did some worse form of disrespect.
Which obviously makes more sense, just, you know, logically. So if someone sees something, you know, shaking, their natural reaction is going to be to...
It's a very fine line. He's being judged very finely because, yeah, it's just he wasn't thinking straight. He should have been...
They're judged at a very, very high level. I don't know much about Uzzah. I don't know if I really heard about him mentioned in that. Maybe he was.
I don't know if there is anything besides.
So it's just... Yeah. It's almost one of those things that you hear it, and like, so the second shot that he took care of his knees, and that obviously is...
Worth right. It. I think that's this is just me. I think that's the balance of it. Right. Right. I think that's the balance. The balance is... The pasuk doesn't say anything about him doing anything terribly disruptful, disrespectful. It's a drasha based on the word shalu, which Rashi says is something like you're like removing something. Maybe he was like dropping something there. So it's a
by shalu, you know, nashal, like he cast off.
And right, exactly.
Disparaging way.
Yeah. So I imagine the reason that Chazal saw to darshan the pasuk in that way is probably along the lines that it doesn't seem like the punishment was so bad, or deserved to be so bad. On the other hand, that's reading the psukim straight, it seems like that was the bad act that he deserved punishment for. I think that is the balance of that Chazal are trying to that they're arguing about over here.
Can you say why he did that? Why he was so disrespectful?
There is no further detail. I'm not sure.
And that whole section is so, I think that it's so absent of adjective and description of the Teor that it's kind of shocking.
Yeah.
It's all going so well, the parade, Tehr David.
Okay, it was not there. It was behind the wall.
Yeah, I'm not sure. It's definitely a very cryptic a cryptic line from Chazal. And then it continues in that same context. Vayamas sham im Aron ha'elokim, that Uzzah died there. Amar Rav Yochanan Uzzah bali olam haba, that although Uzzah was punished, perhaps he was punished very, very strictly for the thing that he had done, so that he was still zocha to olam haba, that this punishment served as a kapara for his mistake, and therefore he was able to still be zocha to olam haba. Shenamar im Aron ha'elokim, that he died im ha'aron ma Aron the olam kayim af Uzzah bali olam haba. Just like the Aron is everlasting, even hid away, but it's there forever. So to Uzzah, never was fully gone. He didn't go to Gehenna. He was able to go to Olam Haba. The pasuk says, "Vayichar leDavid al asher paratz Hashem peretz beUzzah." Hashem, that David was mad. He was angry. Vayichar about the whole ordeal that happened with Uzzah and what Uzzah had tried to done and the whole punishment for Uzzah. He was very upset about the whole thing. So Amar Rabbi Elazar, says that actually Vayichar does not mean that David was angry. He wasn't angry at anything. Uzzah deserved what he got, and Hashem punished him appropriately. Vayichar doesn't mean angry. Amar Rabbi Elazar shenishtanu panav kicharara, that David's face got dark, got blackened like a harara, like a burnt cake is dark. Vayichar is lashon harara, that David's face got dark, which the Marashal explains that he was nitzdar, he was very pained about the whole ordeal. He felt that he was personally responsible. We're going to see later on, the Aron shouldn't have been on a wagon. It should have been carried by people, by the Levim. So the fact that it was in a wagon was probably David's fault in the first place. So he felt very pained about the whole thing that happened, but he wasn't angry at any particular individual, Uzzah or HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He wasn't angry. Vayichar means that he was just upset about the whole situation. Elamayata, the Gemara asks, Kol hecha dechsi vayichar hachanami? Does the word vayichar never mean angry? It always means that somebody's face turned dark, that they were upset about what happened? Gemara says, no. Hasam ksiv af, hacha lo ksiv af. Over here, it doesn't say vayichar af, it just says vayichar. So vayichar af Hashem be'Uzzah, Hashem was angry at Uzzah, and vayichar leDavid, David wasn't angry at anyone, he was just upset about what had happened. Different way, so that's what the word vayichar means over here, not anger, but it was his face got dark, he was upset about what happened. Darash Rava, Mipnei Ma Ne'enash David. Why was David punished? Rashi says that this whole situation happened under his guard, that this was this is a punishment for David, that he had to experience such tragic things happening in front of his eyes. Why did he deserve such a punishment? Mipnei Shekara LeDivrei Torah Zmiros. That he called Torah Zmiros, like a song, like a fun game. Shenamar Zmiros Hayalichu Kacha Bebeis Meguri, that your chukim, your laws were Zmiros in my house. Your laws were like songs. Amalo Kash Barhu, Divrei Torah, Shakasu Behen, Hisif Einacha Bo Ve'einenu. The Torah is a very serious thing. And Pasuk says if you would blink your eyes, Ve'einenu, you can lose it. If you don't constantly review your Torah and constantly have your mind on Torah, you can forget it in a second. It's a very chashuv thing. It's not a fun game. So Ata Koreo San Zemiros, you're gonna call it a Zemiros, like a song, like an empty song. Harein Machshilcha Bedavar Shafilu Tinoko Shalbeis Rabban Yodinoso. Hashem says, I'm going to be machshel you. You're going to stumble in an area that even the kids in school know. The kids in cheder know this halacha. Dechsev, as it says, Ulevnei kehas lo nasan ki avodas hakodesh v'gomer, that the bnei kehas, Hashem, that Moshe didn't give them wagons because they were going to be carrying the aron. You don't need a wagon to transport the aron. They would carry the aron bakatef. And therefore, David should have realized he should not be traveling with the aron in a wagon. Ve'ihu asya v'agalta, and David went and brought it in a wagon. That was the mistake that he made, that Hashem set him up for as a punishment for calling Torah Zemiros, which is always a balance. We're supposed to enjoy ourselves and get hana from our learning, but it shouldn't be a lightheaded game, like a zemer. It should be with a level of seriousness and connecting to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but also being able to enjoy your learning at the same time as well. Definitely a balance. The pasuk. Now, we're going to quote a pasuk from Shmuel Aleph. So we're going to be shifting backwards in time. So we were just now talking about Uzzah, which we called travel number two, where David was traveling in Shmuel Beis with the Aron, and then Uzzah tries to catch it. They were going on their way to Yerushalayim. We're now going to go back in our time machine to earlier in Shmuel Aleph, where the Plishtim had just sent back the Aron. The Plishtim had previously stolen the Aron. They then sent them back on wagons to Klai Yisrael, and at that time, the following occurred. The Gemara is just kind of talking about all the different our own travels to, you know, once we're talking about Uzzah and talking about the Aron by the Yardin. So this pasuk is from earlier in Shmuel Aleph. Bayach ba'anshe Beis Shemesh ki ra'u ba'aron. That the people in Beis Shemesh were hit, they were killed because they saw the Aron. Mishum de ra'u bayach, like when I asked, they deserve to be killed because they saw, because they looked at the Aron. That's a deserves a punishment. Why is that a bad thing? So whereas machlokas are be'avah over be'alazar, chad al mar kotzrin u'mishtachavin hayu. One says that they bowed at the Aron when it passed by, but they were still kotzrin, that they were still doing their malacha, they were still harvesting the crop as the Aron passed by, and as they were harvesting, they also did their bow to the Aron. That's one interpretation. V'chad amar mili nami amar. And one says, no, they actually said something disparaging and inappropriate to the Aron, to the Shechina, as it passed by. And what did they say? They said, man imreich de imris, who got you upset, Aron, quote-unquote, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that you, the Aron, got yourself captured and didn't free yourself. Uman asa alach deifasa. And what's changed now that you've been appeased, that you were willing to come back to us? They're kind of like mocking the Aron, mocking HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Why do we deserve that the Aron should be taken away from us? And what changed suddenly now that the Aron's going to come back to us? On that first shot, I've heard from Rav Schechter, uses as an opportunity for a sharp musser, which I feel like everyone, including myself, has issue with. He said that the Gemara describes the terrible thing that the people, and as the Aron passed by, that they bowed to the Aron, but they still continued harvesting their crops and doing their other things while they gave attention to the Aron. So he says that there are people, Chas Shalom, who while they're davening, they're saying Aleinu, and they're wrapping their tefillin, and they're folding their talis. I'm still bowing to Hashem, I'm still looking at the Aron, I'm still davening to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but I have my own things to do at the same exact time. If you're talking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you're going to do other things while you're davening. Usually, this is definitely for myself, I usually not running out of shul immediately anyway. I'm usually going to be, for example, today was the best way to explain, to hold myself back, is I'm staying here for this year anyway. The shir is 9:05 anyway. I'm not going to be running anywhere. Sometimes we are running somewhere. If you have a shir anyway at 9:05, there's no reason for me to start taking off my talis at Aleinu or during the Tehillim for the Chayalim. I'm going to be going, I'm not going to get anywhere faster. So that's not from me, from the Gedolin, who note that we should try to focus on HaKadosh Baruch Hu and then do our things afterwards, not to try to double multitask and while we're davening to do other things, just like they were punished for bowing to the Aron, but while they were still harvesting their crops and doing their own thing. Then now we continue. Vayach ba'am shivim ish v'chamishim elef ish. That at that time, still in the same story, that these people, when the plishtim sent back the Aron, and they saw the Aron and they bowed, but they didn't do it in the most appropriate way. So 70,050 people died. That's 50,070 people died. A very specific number. 50,070. I would have said around 50,000. But 50,070? So Rabbi Yehovah, Rabbi Elazar, Chad Amar Shivim Ish Hayu. There were 70 people who died. V'kol Echad V'Echad Shakul Kechamishim Elef. And each of those 70 were so chashuv like 50,000 people. V'Chad Amar, the reverse. Chamishim Elef Hayu. 50,000 people died. V'kol Echad V'Echad Shakul Keshivim Sanhedrin. And each of those 50,000 were shakul like the Sanhedrin of 70 people. They were very chashuv people who died regardless. Those are different ways of explaining the 50,070 people who died. And now we go back. Now we are, that was from our part one of our travels of the Plishtim sending us back to Aron and people didn't respect the Aron appropriately. We had the story of Uzzah, that when David tried to bring the Aron to Yerushalayim and then Uzzah tries to catch it and Uzzah gets punished. And now we're on part three, that after that it was in the house of Obed Edom, who had a lot of bracha, and David decides, look how much good things happened to Obed Edom. Maybe it is a good idea to bring it to Yerushalayim. So they continued on their travels to take the Aron from the house of Obed Edom and to bring it to Yerushalayim. And on that travel, the pasuk says, "Vayehi ki tsa'adu nosei Aron Hashem shisha tsa'adim," that as they were carrying the Aron, every six steps, "Vayizbach shor umari," they would bring two karbanos, an ox and a bigger ox, two karbanos every single six steps that they took. That's a lot of karbanos. Miksev, and the same pasuk, the same story, is quoted also in Divrei Hayamim, and over there it says, Shiva Parim v'Shiva Elim. They brought seven cows and seven rams, 14 karbanos, every single six steps. So was it two karbanos, or was it 14 karbanos? That's, either way, it's a lot of karbanos. Tamar Papa Rav Shmuel, Akol Pasio Pasia Shor Umari. So he says that each step was two karbanos, two different types of oxen, and Akol Shesh V'Shesh Psios, every six steps, then they also brought Shiva Parim v'Shiva Elim. They brought 14 karbanos. So every step they brought two karbanos. Every six steps they brought 14 karbanos. That is a lot of karbanos. And whenever to bring a karban, there at that time they had to build a bama to bring the karban. So Gemara asked only Rav Chisda, Im Kain Mileisa is Kol Eretz Yisrael Bamos. The whole land is going to be filled with mizbechos, with karbanos, with these makeshift karbanos to bring the animals. That's too many karbanos. Salam Rav Chisda. Rav Chisda tempers it a bit. Al kol sheish v'sheish psios shor umari. Every six steps they brought two karbanos. Still a lot, but a less. And al kol shisha sidarim shel sheish psios. Every six sets of six steps. So every 36 steps. Then they brought their 14. Their shiva parim v'shiva elim. So not as many as before. Still a lot, but not a crazy amount like we had said previously. And another difference in the psukim, ksiv kidon uksiv nachon. Now back to the story of Uzzah, that Uzzah trying to catch the Aron and he caught it and he got punished. Where did that occur? So the same story happens is told in Shmuel Beis and in Divrei Hayamim, and it calls the location different things. One place it calls that the Aron was by Kidon, and one place it says ksiv nachon, that it was good. So Amar Rav Yochanan, betchila kidon ulvesof nachon. At first it was kidon, at first it was a spear. It was it caused the downfall of Uzzah. And ultimately, ulvesof nachon, it ultimately was a good thing. The Aron was a source of goodness to Oved Edom, who was the one who housed the Aron in the aftermath of the story of Uzzah. Two dots. We now go back to the stones that we were carrying across the Yarden. So the Gemara is going to describe that there were several different sets of stones that Klal Yisrael have in our history. There were three sets of stones. The Gemara continues, Nimtzeis ata omer shlosha minei avonim hayu. There were three types of stones in Tanakh. Number one, Echad shehekim Moshe be'eretz Moav. This first set of stones is not mefurish in the Torah. It doesn't say anywhere that Moshe had some stones, but Chazal darshin that Moshe also wrote the Torah on stones. Shnei Amar, as it says, be'ever hayardin be'eretz Moav hoel Moshe be'eretz haTorah hazos. That it says in Parshas Zvarim that Moshe explained the Torah with the lashon of be'er ulaholan hu omer, and then later describing Yehoshua, where we know it's explicit by Yehoshua's time that there were stones. And there it says, V'chasafta alayin, it's called Divrei HaTorah Hazos V'gomer. And there, by Yehoshua, the V'gomer includes the Lashon of Be'er, that by Yehoshua's time, they wrote the Torah on stones, and it was also Be'er Hetev. So the Gemara darshins, Va'asya Be'er Be'er, just like the stones, just like by Yehoshua's time, they wrote the Torah on stones, so too by Moshe. Now Moshe doesn't even say the word stones anywhere. The Torah doesn't say anything about Moshe writing anything on stones, but we darshin, it says, Be'er by Moshe, Be'er, that the Moshe was Be'er as the Torah azos, and therefore we darshin that Be'er is reference to Moshe also writing the Torah on stones. That is the set of stones number one. And then there were two sets of stones in the times of Yehoshua. Number two, ve'echad shehekim Yehoshua besoch haYarden. One is the set of stones that they actually left by the Yarden to be a simon, to be a symbol to remind everybody about the nace that happened as they crossed the Yarden. Shne'amar u'shtei mesrei avonim hekim Yehoshua besoch haYarden. That there were 12 stones that they had carried that they left by the Yarden. So that's number two. And then number three, the Echad Shehekim Bagilgal. And then number three is the ones that we were talking about the whole time, that they took these 12 stones and they wrote and they had them for the Brachos and Klalos at Hagrizim and Har Eval, and then they continued and they ultimately placed them by Gilgal. Shenemar Ve'eshtem Esrei Avonim Ha'ela Asher La'kachu V'gomer. That's the third set of stones. So number one is the ones from the times of Moshe. Number two is from the times of Yehoshua that they left those stones by the Yarden. And number three is the set of stones that they brought for the Brachos and Klalos by Har Grizim and Har Eval after they had crossed the Yarden. They brought that into Eretz Yisrael, and ultimately those were placed by Gilgal. There's an amazing Marashah over here. The Marashah quotes from the Sefer HaYikarim, who we know the Rambam has Yud Gimel Ikari Emunah. That the Rambam has 13 principles of faith that are the foundations of Emunah. The Sefer HaYikar, Rabbi Yosef Albo, cuts it down to three, which are that Torah is Min HaShemayim. Number two is that there is Metzias Hashem, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one who runs the world. And number three is Schar Va'onesh. And the Marsha beautifully and perfectly aligns these three stones, which are the foundation of our Emunah. These three stones correspond to those three Ikarim of Rabbi Yosef Albo. The first set of stones from Moshe was the Torah that Moshe got from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He wrote that Torah that he got from Hashem on these stones. That's Ikar number one, that Torah is Min HaShemayim. Number two, that Metzias Hashem, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world. Those are the stones that were left to remind us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu split the Yardin for us. HaKadosh Baruch Hu controls Teva and can shift Teva because HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world. And number three, Schar Va'onesh. That's the third set of stones that we brought to our Gizim and Hareval and recited the Brachos and Klalos. Imamish beautifully lines up those three Ikarim from Rabbi Yosef Albo, align with the three stones, which are stones represent the foundations of our Emunah. They align perfectly with those three Ikarim. Let's just do a little bit more, and then we'll call it a day. So now the Gemara describes how they wrote the Torah on these stones. Tana Rabbanan, Ketzad Kasvi Yisrael Etzat Torah. How do they write the Torah on these stones? The Pasuk describes that they wrote the Torah on the stones, which again, it's a lot of words to write. Must have been big stones, or perhaps they wrote a shorthand. They wrote the Torah on the stones, and also they plastered those stones. So they also covered it over with plaster, which at first glance seems a little strange. You're going to write all these words on these stones and then cover it up with plaster. So who's going to be able to read those words if you're going to cover it up with plaster afterwards? Bisato Osam Basid. So how did they go about writing the stones and plastering it? How does that even help? So Rabbi Yehuda Omer Al Gabe Avanim Kasvuha. They wrote the Torah on the stones. Shine Amar Vichasavta Al Avanim Es Kol Devei HaTorah Hazos VeGomer. So they first wrote the Torah on the stones. VaAcharkach Sadu Osam Basid. And then they plastered over them. This is all with the third set of stones that they brought with them into Eretz Yisrael, and they had wrote the Torah and then plastered on top of it. And then plastered on top of it. Amar Shimon Lidvarecha, or Shimon asks the obvious question, Heyach Lamdu Umos Al Oso Azman Torah. How are the Umos HaOlam able to learn the Torah if they had plastered it over? The Chazal Rashi explains that the whole point of writing the Torah on these stones was to give the Umos HaOlam an opportunity to see what the Torah is, and once they reject the Torah, then they have no excuses about why they deserve to be kicked out of the land and ultimately deserve to go to Gehenna. Writing the Torah on these stones was meant to prevent them from saying, hey, if you would have given us a shot to read the Torah, maybe we would have accepted it. So we wrote the Torah on the stones to give the Umos HaOlam an opportunity to see what it's all about, but then we're going to cover it up. So how does it even help? How is the Umos HaOlam able to read the words if it's been plastered over? So Amalo, so Yehuda responds, Bina Yesera Nasan Behem HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave them this extra understanding, this extra Bina, that the words were there, and therefore Shigru no tirun shalahem. They sent their sofrim to the stones, the kilfu es hasid, and they took off the plaster, the hisiua, and they copied over the words of the Torah, and then took it back to the rest of the Umos HaOlam to share with them what the Torah was all about, and then ultimately they rejected the Torah, and therefore they deserved their demise. V'al davar zeh nischatem gizar dinam lebe'er shachas, and that's why they deserved to fall to Gehenim. Shahaya lehen lelamed v'lo limdu. They should have learned, they should have explained this Torah to the Umos HaOlam and accepted the Torah. And since they rejected the Torah, even though it was available to them, they therefore deserved their downfall. Tosfos asks an important question. You can look at that Tosfos over there, but this seems to contradict what we're more familiar with, that B'Shas Matan Torah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu went nation to nation offering them the Torah. It sounds like they already had an opportunity, so why are they being punished specifically because they rejected the Torah over here? Didn't they reject the Torah over there? Tosfos tries to combine these two Mamari Chazal as not being a contradiction, but really working together. There were two different opportunities that the Umos HaOlam rejected the Torah. So that was all the first Mahalach, that they were told to write the Torah on the stones and to plaster it. And the first sheet of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says they first wrote the words and then they plastered it. And the Umos HaOlam were supposed to come and remove the plaster to learn the Torah. And Rav Shimon Omer, no. Al Gabe Sid Kasvua. They wrote the Torah on top of the plaster. They plastered first, wrote the words on top. So therefore, the Goyim would be able to read the Torah very easily. The kasva lehen lamata, and then underneath the whole writing of the Torah, they then wrote the following pasuk: Laman asher lo yalamdu eschem laasos kichol vegomer. That the reason why, when we enter, we have to, or on our way to conquer Israel, we have to get rid of all the nations, is so that we don't learn from their ways and ultimately come to follow their paths of avodah zarah, which therefore implies that halamata shemayu chozrim b'tshuva hayu mekablin osan. That if they would be chozrim b'tshuva, and there'll be no concern that we're going to follow their avodah zarah ways, because if they throw away their avodah zarahs, we'd be mekabel and we would accept them as gerim, and therefore we gave them this opportunity to read the words of the Torah, and we're willing to accept them if they would accept the Torah, and only if they don't do we have to get them out of our way as we continue on into Eretz Yisrael. One last line, then we'll stop for the day. Amar Rava Bar Shila, my time at Rabbi Shimon. What's the reason for Rabbi Shimon that he thinks that they first plastered and then wrote the Torah? Dechsiv, the Hayu Amim Misarfos Sid, that the nations were punished like burnt plaster. Al Iske Sid, which Rabbi Shimon understands, they were punished for not reading the words of the Torah that he holds were written on top of the plaster. Al Iske Sid. Rabbi Yehuda, why is he being punished for the plaster? They weren't punished for the words that were on the plaster. They removed the plaster on their own. So Rabbi Yehuda, ki sid. They were punished like sid. Ma sid ein lo takana, ela srefa. Just like plaster is created from burning stone. Af osam akusim ein lahem takana, ela srefa. So too, they also are only gonna, they're only, Their only eventual conclusion would be through Sreifa's Gehenim, being punished for not accepting the Torah. There's one very quick note, halacha, Athar of Avaji Yosef and Yechav Adas, Chelek Vav, Simon and Hay, actually quotes a halacha from this sheet of Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon holds that they first plastered the stones and then wrote the Torah on top of the plaster. He says, I'm not holding in Safros and Klaf, but apparently, I think he says that the common minhag, at least what he was referring to, that they would put some sort of coating, some shiny glass coating on top of the Klaf. And the question was, can you write the Sefer Torah on top of cloth that has this shiny coating on top of it? Is that considered a chatzitza between the cloth and the ink? Again, I'm not sure what we do lemaisa. And he quoted from the Afla, who brings our Gemara as a raya. The pasuk says to write the Torah on the stones, and they plastered it first and then wrote the Torah on top of the stones. So perhaps our Gemara is a raya that you can write the Torah on top of this the coating of the cloth. It's not going to be a chatzitza. That's like the sid was not a chatzitza for them at that time. To try and quote in some halacha lemaisa from our from our Agata from today. So we discussed a whole bunch of different things. We started off talking about the Meraglim. A lot of the things that we're familiar from Rashi Ala Torah are quoted on today's Daf, Sota Lamed Hey, from the story of the Meraglim. We then shifted to the travels of the Aron and the classic story of Uzzah and his punishment. The punishment of the people of Beis Shemesh who saw the Aron and they didn't give it the proper respect. And we went back to talking about the stones and the three different sets of stones that they had along their ways from Moshe and the two stones from the times of Yehoshua and how they wrote the Torah on the stones and also plastered it in Machlokas about the order of the writing and the plastering. Shkayach.